Open up your ears and open up your mind. They'll reach into your throat and pull out your spine. And when the sun blows up and the earth is gone, there's still experience grind with Kyle and Sean.
Now, is the counting any different in person? Like, does it come across as differently timed, Brooks?
Not really. It does not.
Wow.
It actually came. It actually felt like it was just like earlier this week.
Not gonna lie, that's pretty bullshit.
What do you mean?
What do you mean earlier this week? Have you guys already done an episode without me?
No, I meant last week.
Oh, okay.
Been hitting the head a few times with a chair. Give me some grace here.
That's fine. That's fine. Kyle, you are recording from a very different location right now.
Yeah, I'm literally looking at Brooks's beautiful face, and I'm enamored. That's why I've been speechless. Yes, but yeah.
My dog is enamored with him as well.
Yeah, his dog loves me. He's hanging out with me.
Yeah,
but we're just I'm in town. I'm in Indiana visiting family, and I was very concerned how we were going to record this week's episode, and then I remembered, wait, I'm in Indiana. I'm like 20 minutes from Brooks. I'll just go to his house, and it's going to work out perfectly.
That's freaking awesome. This makes life so easy, I think, for all of us, and we're getting it done a little bit earlier, so you guys can hang out or do whatever. This is perfect.
Yeah.
Love it almost as much as I loved playing Phasmophobia with you guys this last weekend.
Oh my God. If you listeners missed out on that stream, well, what can I say other than you missed out? It was a good time, but there is a VOD of it up on the Experience Grind podcast Twitch channel. Go check it out. It was a good time.
Pull it down too and like chop up a bunch of it, because there were a lot of requests for just like Ryan rant sections, because Ryan also enjoyed us, and man, he was just taunting every ghost, but yet somehow I still died first every time.
Yeah, every time
he got me killed once too. I'm like, wait a minute, I'm the most experienced player here.
I think Sean's the only one that didn't die at all, right? Did you just
I died
away
once and
one
it
time
was, and it was bullshit. I stuck myself in a corner, right? And it was in the child's room, and I had a camcorder. I had it aimed at the opposite corner because that room was getting cold. It was very clearly the ghost room. I'm like, okay, I'm going to capture it. I got this. And I just heard, and I'm like, fuck. And you just see the fingers come across in front of your screen. Like, no, I'm gone. But yeah. My strategy, I feel like, works. It would just keep you alive in pretty much any situation. Like, I was
alive,
watching
you were
this
alive
movie.
Like 90% of the time.
I was what?
You were alive 90% of the time.
Yeah. And it's not like I was just hiding in the van.
No, you were involved.
See, so there's parts in this movie where, like, somebody went to go down to the basement. I'm like, no, what are you doing? You don't
this
do
is not
that.
How you play Phasmophobia, you
This is
idiots.
Not how you play Staying Alive.
Yeah, that was pretty great, man. I had a blast playing it with you fellas. It was so much fun. I think we established that night that we're going to try to do more things like that going forward. I don't know. It was hype. I had a blast the whole time. I just wanted to keep playing more, but I had to get up and drive to Indiana like the next day. So.
Yeah. I honestly and truly cannot wait to play that game again. That night was so much fun, and it was a nice surprise to have Ryan jump in, and we had a fourth, and your whole camera setup that you had going on Twitch was just primo. Everyone could see all of our reactions as to what was going on, but only saw your point of view. It was so good.
Yeah.
I love you boys. I've come to that conclusion.
Yeah. It was a great time. I had so much fun. Damn ghosts, though, man.
the most memorable part for me, there was a time I had the video camera in night vision, and one of the ghosts, like, walked out of a room, walked in between you guys, and, like, stared at me in the camera as it walked by and was, like, screaming at me. And I'm like, what in the fuck is happening here?
Dude, the times where you can see the ghost, like, I was outside of the host. Okay, I felt like such a voyeur half the time that I was playing that, because, like, I would run out to the truck because I would go in first with all the stuff that you can just put down. And then I go back to the truck to get stuff that I'm going to hold for the rest of the time. And I would come back to the door and the door's slamming shut. And I'm just like looking in the window and I'm seeing like things flying and this creepy ass ghost over there. Ugh. And at the campground,
Man, that guy came up. He ran me down super fast there. Yeah. And it was in the bathroom. That was the creepiest part.
Yep.
Dude, turning on the shower.
Yeah.
Though I'm not completely convinced that it wasn't just Ryan turning on the shower nonstop.
Yeah. Ryan just running around taunting the ghost at every level and then causing me to get killed by it was
Ryan. Dude, I love the audio style of proximity. So we'd be down in the basement chat. And Ryan's just yelling so loud from upstairs that I can just hear from a distance. I heard you're a little bitch. You fucking suck, you little bitchy ghost.
Fuck you, ghost. You suck.
I'd go down to the basement and Ryan be going up and I'm laughing like the entire time because I just hear Ryan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ryan. That dude's got balls of steel, dude. Yeah.
I would not go into a real haunted house with him.
No.
No. No, like, self-preservation, baby.
Yeah, I'm gonna die.
You're in the jungle, baby.
Oh. You're gonna die. Oh, boys, this has been a Brookstober for the ages. This one has been absolutely great. From the movies that we watched to that game that we played. This was a really good month, and I'm glad that we have another episode to wrap this month off. And, I want to thank you guys for your picks that you've had this month.
Much better choices.
Hey, your pick wasn't bad at all either. So, I mean, thank you introducing me to Hush.
Mm. Oh,
did
man.
Did you boys like the hat draw that I did?
I did.
It was faded.
The audience doesn't even know. We almost changed what we were going to do for this week.
But yeah, I put all three movies in a hat, and I drew out the original choice, which was the Salem's Lot HBO special. HBO movie.
The other options were The Lost Boys, which is selfishly one of my favorite movies, so yeah. I was hyped for that. But what was the other one that was an option that we might have done?
John Carpenter's Vampires.
Yeah, that's right. With James Woods.
Okay.
Yeah. That's actually a really good movie, too.
Yeah.
It's James Woods, one of the Baldwin brothers. Is it Billy?
No.
It's not Alec. It's Stephen.
Stephen.
It's Stephen Baldwin.
I think it's
Stephen Baldwin.
He's pretty good in it. I really like that movie a lot. It's pretty
It's one brutal. I watch every once in a while when I'm like, I just want to watch a movie that's senseless, kick-ass vampires.
I'll have to add that to my list to watch regardless, but I'll say I am actually kind of glad that we didn't pivot away from Salem's Lot.
I honestly am overall, too. I think, you know, we'll go into this more in depth, but this isn't one I feel critics got totally wrong, man. I thought this movie absolutely rocked from start to finish.
I agree. And I was actually thinking about it while I was watching the movie, while I had the same thoughts of, like, imagine if we only chose the movies that we wanted to watch based on if they just got great critic reviews. Like, that's none of the movies that we watch or talk about.
True. No. True.
So, like, the fact that that was almost a determining factor is kind of an undermine to the show. And at the end of this movie, I'll bury the lead. I enjoyed this movie a lot. And I've never seen the original Salem's Lot. So, like, I had no idea right off the rip that it's Salem's Lot because it's Jerusalem's Lot.
Yeah, man.
Mm-hmm. Like, had no clue. They just rubbed the
Jerusalem off. Yeah. It's cool. And that's, I've said before, like, there's one of his other short stories is called Jerusalem's Lot. And it's about the same town when it was first established in Maine in, like, 1820 or something.
Sure.
And, it's a great one because that's one where Stephen King writes it in the journal style, which is always my favorite writing of his.
Well, yeah, it pays homage to Bram Stoker's Dracula in that way. Because that book is written in the journal letter style.
But it just kicks ass, and it just shows, like, the town has been rotten for a long time. And it's one of the things that the sheriff says, like, the lot's gone bad now. You need to get the hell out of here.
Yeah.
Because it's this whole idea that just a section of town is not good, or, like, a section of, like, the land. Because he's always had that with Derry, too. Derry is the cursed city. And
I was about to say, at the end of this, I watched this with Sarah earlier today, and at the end of the movie, she's like, man, that is a really big trope that he has, is just like the decay of the city, or the emptiness of whatever city or place that they are set in, that is allowing all of this evil to kind of run rampant.
It's partially, I guess, it would be, you know, experience, because he's from Maine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
at what point, though, does everybody in Maine say, fuck this, we got to get out of here?
You've cursed us, Stephen King.
Like Jesus, there's a killer clown over there. Aliens crash landed over there. And like 30 years ago, there's vampires over in the lot.
And, you know, the devil came to Castle Rock to sell me antiques.
Oh, my what? God.
There's another short story about Salem's Lot, too, isn't there? Because it's about like the family that sets it off in this. Yeah, it's pretty. It's a guy telling a story to the bar people. But anyway, like, yeah.
Hey, run
that
in.
That would be someone coming in. So
sweet.
We got mad dogs.
Yes. I have my dog gets excited.
Yeah. So does Rupert.
Yeah. So.
Hey, this is a special in-person recording.
We get what we get.
Yeah.
Who we gives don't a throw shit? A fit.
Yeah. I have a house full of kids and two dogs, so.
Mm-hmm.
Salem's Lot, like, just, I don't know, man. The thing that people said was discouraging about this movie is that it just sort of, like, it's a slow burn until it all sort of, like, coalesces really quickly at the end. But I think the people that say that, they don't understand that that's every Stephen King story.
Yeah.
It's also like world building and like character build up, and then shit just hits the fan and it's who's left at the end.
So I also read that about the original Salem's Lot, which was over an hour longer than this movie. So like, mm-hmm. I don't know, pick a fucking side. Like this is an hour shorter. And also like, I kind of disagree with the whole slow burn thing. This wasn't a slow burn of a movie. Like a kid gets like annihilated within 15 minutes of the start of the movie. And then another kid gets annihilated. Like
by that kid. All right. So you bring that up. Cause that's one of the things I wanted to first focus on, because that whole scene of them sneaking through the forest is so coolly shot and like stylized with like this deep, dark blue. And it's all like a 2D thing. It's all shadow puppet style almost, where like the two
kids. It looked like Limbo.
Yeah, it did. It looked exactly like Limbo, because we just see the two shadows of the kids sneaking through the woods as we like pan through them. And then like almost like a cartoon villain-esque, the
Straker
with the top hat and everything just like grabs the kid from behind out of nowhere. And just when they like sneak away and he's like staring at them in the car.
Oh yeah.
God, dude.
Oh my God. Did you pick up that when it went to his perspective and he's watching the kids walk away, he's got this sinister grin in the rear view mirror that's reflecting back at him.
That.
But when it cuts back to him, he's straight faced, but he's like, whenever it is from his perspective, he's got just this sinister look on his face. Shining back at you. Oh, that was such a nice touch.
I caught that. I was like, oh man, that is creepy.
And talking about that scene, Kyle, it almost made me think of like Little Nightmares as well. Because like that kid that gets snagged is the one that's scared of the dark. And ends up getting this harmonica from that Mark or Mike kid, whatever the kid's name is.
Mark,
to help calm him down at night, helps his breathing, whatever. And sure enough, that is in pure Stephen King horror-esque-ness, the first kid that gets, you know, you don't see him get killed, but you know he got killed pretty
I mean,
viciously.
See the vampire coming down the stairs through the cloth. That's such a great scene, man. We're like,
so sick.
It's and like, there's the hole in the cloth bag that the kid's in, and like,
and he's trying to track it,
move it to look out. Oh, mm-hmm. goddamn, dude! When the candles all blow out, it's so well done, dude.
Like, well, and you hear,
yeah,
you hear him whispering too mm-hmm. throughout that, which is different from the original movie.
I love to. They have the kid doing that like high pitched like true terror scream that kids do. Where like, so it's
blood curdling.
Yes, I didn't have my skin crawl like that since when in Hereditary, when the mom finds out that the other kid dies and she's just like bawling. Like mm-hmm. that kid's scream affected me on that level because it was like pure terror, man.
Yeah, yeah, it was pretty rough.
Oh, yeah, that entrance to that introduction to Barlow. Yep. Holy crap.
They, Mr. Barlow.
Like, I've seen the images of the, is it Barlow in the original as well?
Yeah.
Kept the same name. I've seen the images of Barlow, and I think a lot of people have, even if they haven't seen Salem's Lot and just didn't put together that that's where he's from. But I think that they did an absolutely fantastic job with the makeup and direction of this Barlow. Very, very reminiscent of that image and look, but also like just a touch more over the top.
It was cool. I like how, you know, they obviously have the nods to the Nosferatu style vampire. And I always like the idea of like, so Barlow's like the head vampire. And so his, like, all of the teeth in his mouth are like the fangs, whereas like all of the little subjects, they just get the longer canines. Mm-hmm. And I always like that Stephen King's vampires have that older world style feel to them, where like they're this huge demonic entity that is even so far different from the vampires that we know. Just,
It has this feeling of like an ancient.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I He's love been around
that. Forever and.
And, like, his coffin is just so ornate.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's sexy.
Dude, the twist that he does with coffins in it is great, too. The fact that all the cars turn into coffins. Such an awesome modern twist on it.
That was really cool. What was, how closely did this follow the original? I mean,
honestly, very closely. That's the way it goes in that, too.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's a big final battle at the drive-in theater. They knock down the wall to get more sunlight. All pretty accurate. That's why I was really impressed with this movie. And I only think the critics and stuff that didn't like it just don't know the original Salem's Lot. Because I feel, for the most part, it really stuck to it. Mm-hmm. It's got the creepy part.
The story. I mean, I've got the book over there.
Yeah. The creepy part with the kid knocking on the window is one of the creepiest scenes I've ever read in a book. The way it's
I like the way you talked about
when he goes to Mark's house.
Mm-hmm.
I like the way they handled that, you know, with the whole invitation and rescinding your invitation.
Oh, dude, that made me laugh so hard. That when Burke was like, I rescind your invitation to Mike, and Mike and just flies out the door.
So tight.
Like, that's all it takes for a vampire? I've never thought of that.
Yeah, they got to be invited in. And I had never thought about, too, like, kicking them back out and revoking their access, but... I like, too, how, like, they would, because they play with it a couple times, like, when Mark's getting, the kid's knocking on his window, and you see, like, their eyes go kind of white when they're under the spell or the trance that, like, all vampires can do, too. That, just, beautiful little touches like that. The cross is glowing like that?
The cross glowing and lighting up was really awesome, and it only really lighting up in the presence of a vampire was really cool. So, like, when the doctor... got
when
bit.
They make that one so awesome
enough the first time that it kind of fell apart
when he like is holding it at her, and as soon as it falls apart
the energy coursing through it just broke it. They didn't
what but it was just sort of like limply falls and like
tongue depressors.
That's great, man. I love that. I love when Per Callahan's loses its power.
Yeah,
he loses his faith.
Yeah, and I'm glad this is one of the nice changes that they had from the original in the original movie, and they made this more like the book. In the original movie, that Barlow didn't talk at all. He was just a monster, mm-hmm. and Straker was the mouthpiece. He was the Paul Heyman. and so this one, Barlow is actually intelligent and can communicate, and the it's so sad to see a man lose his faith. Like that whole little
bit
there.
And then the cross goes out.
Yeah, that was so nice.
Mm-hmm. Barlow's even more talkative in the actual book, man.
Oh, yeah.
He taunts. He's a real shit talker in the
book. Oh, yeah, he is. But, man, I mean, it also plays on his, old worldness, too. Mm-hmm.
You guys have me wanting to read that book. I have not read it. I loved this story. This is, in terms of Stephen King, like, books to visual mediums that I've seen, this is up there for me in terms of story. You know, because so often you watch something that's awesome. Like, I loved Outsiders. Like, that book was awesome. And I don't know. You guys, I love it. But so often at the end, it just, like, falls apart. Not even in the third act. At the end of the third act, like, right at the end, when you're like, man, this was so awesome. And
that is the other big complaint about our big buddy Stephen King, is that, like, the man doesn't know how to end.
Yeah, no, but this, like, ended so it ended.
It does, man.
I don't know how there is a second Salem's Lot movie, but, well, I guess I could see how there could be, but
That one also wasn't very good.
Yeah.
So
there's also he's got other short stories about similar types of vampires to Barlow. So there are other old world vampires in Stephen King's worlds. But I would recommend you read Salem's Lot, man. It's for a Stephen King. It's pretty short. You could probably get through it in like a couple days, to be honest.
Whereas what were they called? Type ones?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there's also Popsy, who's one.
Yeah.
And then there's the Night Flyer, who's another one
who travels across the plane. Night Flyer is a good short story and a halfway decent movie, too.
Which one?
Night Flyer.
Oh, yeah. Night Flyer is really good. But it's about an old world vampire who travels by plane flying at night, and then he kills people at the small little regional airports he lands at.
Oh, that's freaking awesome.
It's a short story, so.
Yeah.
Nightmares and Dreamscapes, I think, is what that one's in.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, any Stephen King vampire stuff, he gets it, man. He makes them creepy, which is, that's one thing especially that was lacking in vampire movies in general lately. And that's one of the goals that the director of this movie stated he wanted to do, was make vampires scary and creepy again. And a lot of it he nailed, man. That Mike vampire, there's so many times when, like, he's in the house with the other dude and it just, you know he's there.
Dude, my skin's crawling. Just thinking of, like, when you had Burke kind of putting everything together while Mike's there. And, like, you see the gears in his head turning when he sees the marks on Mike's neck.
Mm-hmm.
And he's, you know, you almost see him battling with, am I crazy? Or, no, I'm not crazy. Like, that's a vampire right there. But then it's, again, not really a slow burn. Within seconds, you hear him. You see him start to hear things going on up in a room where this person shouldn't be having anybody. You know, it's second floor. Who's going through the window?
It's so creepy when he just sees the legs go in when he goes outside.
Yeah.
That part was great. When he goes to shut the window and Mike gets, like, the red sheen in his eyes for a second when he's behind him. Ah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah. It was like one of those, you look away or you blink and you miss it moments, mm-hmm. that I'm glad that I saw it, because it was just so cool. I love the aesthetic of the vampires in here with their glowing eyes and just, like, the gauntness. Fantastic direction.
Fantastic character design, creature design. They know that, like, they get the sunken eyes, the red glowing eyes. I love that because it makes them, like, animalistic. Ugh.
Mm-hmm.
I could rave about this movie, man. I so enjoyed it. Yeah. I liked it too because, like, Brooks, you saw it well before us, and like, I was trying to skirt us away from it a bit, and you're like, okay, if you want to, but you're like, nah, man, we should watch this movie.
Yeah. I mean, I've watched all three versions of Salem's Lot, because there was another one mid-2000s, I think.
Was it? I don't think I've seen that one.
Yeah, because I think Rutger Hauer
really
played Barlow.
Okay.
And it wasn't bad, but I mean it wasn't that good either. Hence why you haven't really heard of it. But this is definitely feels like the most faithful version.
Mm-hmm.
Shorter, but it didn't suffer from it.
No, and you know, Sean and I especially famously complain about like the 90-minute movie. This is a 2-hour movie that does not feel like a 2-hour movie at all. Even with the slow burn parts, man, once it starts cooking, it cooks.
Yeah.
I was a little hesitant when I saw that it was 2 hours when I booted it up, as I always am when I see something of that length that I don't know that much about.
Mm-hmm.
But it absolutely flew by.
That's why I didn't warn you about the length, because I was like, this length doesn't matter.
I didn't. I really didn't feel like it was a 2-hour movie at all. Like it went by quick.
I'm looking forward to watching it again. I was so impressed with it. I was like, Mandy has to see this movie. She will fucking love it. I can't wait to watch it again.
Yeah. Holly won't watch this movie at all.
When I had mentioned the idea that we might not be doing this movie for the show, Sarah's like, well, I still want to watch that. It's like, okay, yeah.
Yeah, overall, I'm so glad I did, man. I don't know, who wants to give like the quick rundown of this up?
I could run down real quick. This is a small town of Jerusalem's Lot in Maine where a writer by the name of Ben Mears comes back. He grew up here. He left when he was 9, but he comes back to town looking for inspiration for another book, where he meets Susie, and we see this new guy setting up shop called Barlow and Straker. It's an antique shop, and Straker, we found out, has bought the big mansion on the hill. Picture like your Castlevania, like
Adam's
castle,
family house,
big mansion kind of thing. Or even like the family's house from Beetlejuice. Very reminiscent
that too?
Of that.
Yep.
But like hidden up in the woods on top of a hill. Very first thing we're introduced to, though, is Straker telling these movers to move this big box into the basement of the house. We are introduced to a handful of kids. We've got Mark, we've got Danny, we got Ralphie. That is kind of a tight-knit group. And we learn real quick.
Is this a Christmas story?
kind of, especially with Richie coming up and just trying.
I know too. It's nuts.
But we learn really quick that Mark is the new kid. He is a fighter. He's not going to run from stuff. It only makes it worse. And
love
he's
that.
A real,
That's,
he's
that
a
that
real
whole scene.
Badass. The other kids kind of look up to him because he has no fear. And one of them expresses how, you know, his younger brother's scared of the dark, so he gives him a harmonica, which unfortunately does not save him, because on the way home that night, they run into Straker, who then steals away one of them in the woods and brings him back as a sacrifice
to Barlow.
And from there, things really drastically start to unwind. You've got that kid, you know, he's got his funeral. He ends up, oh no. So he lures his brother outside,
dude,
turns him.
All right, let's talk about this scene for a hot sec. Because super creeped out when, like, the kid's, like, in his bed, and then he just faintly hears a harmonica. And that was a great callback to when he gets the harmonica earlier. That's a great reference in the book. And just when he goes outside, man, it's just, they perfectly capture all that uneasiness. You still hear the harmonica out in the distance, and then the seesaw starts to move. Ugh.
Yeah,
all
he
of it, man.
Sees
I was
the
so
harmonica,
on edge.
And the seesaw just goes, and it's foggy out. It's creepy. You can't see the other side of the seesaw. Ooh.
And then his brother just comes through and grabs him by the
brother.
Mouth.
Just, yep.
It was Barlow.
Oh, was it Barlow? Yeah. I thought it was the brother.
No, the brother was. So the way that scene actually plays out is that Barlow has to sanctify
That's why he kills the first kid.
Yes.
Yeah.
He kills the kid. He doesn't turn the kid.
Oh, okay.
There's nothing left to turn.
I see. So he just murders that kid. He doesn't become an... So that's... Okay.
So he has to sanctify that house, that ground, so he can live there.
Oh, gotcha. That makes this even better.
Yeah.
It makes me want to go back and just, like, watch that scene a little bit closer. But fast forward a little bit. This kid is now in the hospital. He's got anemia. His body can't keep up making blood. And we get this really sick shot where he is laying in bed saying how he's thirsty. And his mom runs out to get... He's getting a blood transfusion. His mom runs out to go get him some water. And she comes back and he is... obliterated this bag of blood to drink it, and he's covered, and next thing you know, he's in a casket in the ground. That was wild. From there, he turns Mike, who works at the cemetery, in a really cool scene.
Yep.
With, like, him taunting him from inside of the coffin with knocks and trying to get out, and until he finally just, like, flies up out of there and attacks Mike. Then there's a lot of changes that happen. A lot of people get turned and bit that you don't see. There's only a handful more that you actually see. But from this point forward, you have Burke, who is actually played by Bill Camp, who was also in The Outsider. He was fantastic in that, and I thought he was fantastic in this. He's a school teacher in this who happens to... know all of this folklore about vampires and knows one when he sees one.
Burke was also awesome because he's just that typical King character that is, he's cool, he's got a good heart, and you just know that motherfucker's gonna die.
Yeah. Yep.
And that character is typically one of the smartest ones in the book.
That's what I feel Salem's Lot, especially like this version, nails. With, like, every King story is that what I love about a Stephen King story is that nobody has plot armor. Like, that doesn't exist. Anybody can die at any time. And that's relevant with Burke and also the girl in the movie, like, getting attacked out of nowhere. And then she turns, man. This is not a happy ending for the main character. It's rough.
Honestly, I thought it had potential for Burke to actually last to the end and have Ben die or turn early. So I was a little surprised. I was a little bummed because I really liked Burke's character. But Burke is now kind of tasked with trying to convince Ben, Susan, and the doctor that these are vampires they're dealing with. The sheriff is completely worthless. Don't even bother. You have Father Calhoun. He's a drunk.
Callahan.
Oh, Callahan, my bad.
Sorry, he just becomes a super central figure in the entire Dark Tower ethos because of what happens to him in the lot. He gets sent to another world. And so, yeah, you put some respect on Per Callahan's name.
Okay, my bad. My bad, boys. But needless to say, while all of this is going on, Mark is having his own story kind of going on, completely separate from them. When he has Danny show up, Danny's the older brother that got turned by Barlow that we just talked about, shows up at Mark's window and like trances him to open the window for him. And that's when we really first see the cross start to glow back on his miniatures. Like,
because Mark is like a big fan of like monsters and scary movies, and he makes miniature sets. So he has like this miniature graveyard set that he's built. And yeah, as he gets backed up to it, because there's an evil vampire, the cross starts to glow. And it's so awesome when he sticks it on his face and it just...
And later on, he still got that cross burnt onto his face. It was so cool. Mm-hmm. So he knows that this is a vampire. Mark gives zero fucks. He's not scared of anything.
Mark and rules so hard, dude.
He starts to go up to the mansion because he figures out where everything is. Well, he meets up with Burke. I know I've kind of jumped over some stuff. It doesn't really matter.
The badass scenes is when they're trying to convince Callahan that there's vampires. Mark just strolls in and starts filling his...
Oh, yeah. The holy water?
After he got captured at the house? Yo, yeah. It was so funny. He's just filling up an entire thermos. Yeah. I love that he's into me. Houdini. I'm going back to kill the vampire.
He gets himself out of the ropes and beats that dude to death.
Yeah, he beats Straker to death.
God, dude.
Yeah, with the iron. So they end up getting into the house. You got Burke ends up getting tackled by Barlow down in the basement.
That's such a cool scene too. When he, as soon as he flipped the lights on, Barlow's right there and just like breaks it. And you see him just tear into Burke. God,
okay,
dude, this movie.
So
rules.
Question for you boys.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's a secret. I do like the episode cards, and I'm really struggling to think of one for this. And that was one that I wanted. But is it too much of a spoiler to have Barlow shown? Because
It's so cool, man, and that's such a cool shot. Plus, if that was your idea, I say go for it.
Plus, I think in like some of the promotional like material, you see that part of that is from that scene.
Okay, cool.
So
100% indoors.
Yes. Okay. He ends up getting captured. He's upside down. He does his Houdini thing, which you so totally cool. knew was coming from the opening scene of this movie when they tie up his hands.
It's
on
so
the...
well established. It's a good movie.
And so he gets out of there, smashes Straker to death with like what was that, like a fire stoker?
Yeah, like a fire poker thing. Yeah, yeah. Like the iron.
Damn. Just man, waylays
this dude.
Splattered.
Yeah.
And an old one too, so that one was whew, probably pretty
like
solid
pure iron. That had some heft, man. And that pointy end? Yeah, dude.
Mm-hmm. And from here, it's all kind of an unravel, like a crazy unravel. It happens very fast. And I think this is what people are saying, like, it's a slow burn and then it goes crazy. Yeah, it really picks up speed here with just how crazy it gets. But, you know, think of like the snowball effect of one vampire bites one and then two bite another. Like, you turn an entire town, steamrolls really
especially
fast.
Especially like a town as small as Salem's Lot.
Yeah. Which, you know, like, all of the cars can fit inside of a drive-in theater parking lot.
You'll find the whole town here most nights.
Yeah.
Oh, that came back to play, too.
Yeah, that was a good foreshadowing.
And dude, yeah, just the writing. Everything's established. Everything has purpose.
And the sheriff wasn't worth shit.
No.
As he comes flying through.
That scene was really sick, too. He tried to get out, and, he should have been like Mark. Had some balls, stayed and fighting.
Yep.
Instead, he gets thrown through the stained glass window. And the hilarious part is that the doctor's not even surprised.
Nope.
I thought
at
it was cool
that point,
that, like,
can you be surprised?
Yeah.
The doctor didn't get a full bite, and she was able to give herself rabies. I thought that was a really cool little... She gives herself the rabies vaccine, and it helps ward it off. That was a nice touch.
Mm-hmm.
Also came back to play when he tried to save his girl. What was her name?
Her name was Susan.
Susan.
Yeah.
I really liked her too, man. Her actress, everything, she played that part so well. Like,
Mackenzie Lee.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
You do you sort of fall for her too, along with the character. And then, man, it's so heartbreaking when she just gets bit out of the blue. Her mom is such a piece of shit.
Oh, man. My God.
That's another Stephen King staple. Like, take the normal everyday person and twist them to that level of evil. Like, because Barlow promised her this. I think the one thing that we don't get with the shortened time is like this establishment of the mom hating Mirks or the author dude. Yeah.
That was out of nowhere.
It is. It kind of is. It's a little more, of course, built up in the book, but it's not needed. We get the gist of it right from that stuff.
What I took from that was this isn't an out of nowhere thing. There's an establishing scene. I don't know, like 20 minutes earlier where you see Straker dancing with her mom in the antique shop. And you're like, oh, man, nothing good's going to come out of that. He mentions about her meeting Mr. Barlow and blah, blah, blah. And so what I took out of the whole Anne not liking Ben was because Ben's trying to stop everything that's going down. And Barlow's like, he's bad.
Yeah.
Or something like that. That's what I took
Straker
from that.
Straker doing that. And then she gets once Mark takes Straker out, she gets the bump up to the big league. She becomes the new Barlow daywalker. Because, you know, in most lore, all vampires have, like, an actual human that can do things for them during the daytime.
Mm-hmm. Which,
she, you know,
man, I should have seen the scene with the doctor coming from a mile away, knowing what I knew. But, man, even when she got blown away, I was like, fuck!
Having even read the story, I still get caught off guard. I'm like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, I forgot about like, mom.
Man, I was expecting, like, Susan to wake up and try to bite her or something. I wasn't expecting just an absolute rifle blast. That was crazy. So, yeah, she gets bitten in a really cool scene. Ben's, like, trying to get to the church and, like, be like, Doc, where's the rabies thing? Where's the rabies thing? And Susan's just twitching out because it's holy ground and she's clearly already got the vamp in her. That shit was wild.
Oh, man.
I like the scene where after she gets taken, he runs, or she flees the church, I guess, or something. And he goes out after her and then realizes there's a whole bunch of vampires out there and they start chasing him.
All and over the almost, buildings?
Almost makes it to the door, gets caught, gets flown up, but the doctor had thrown him a stake.
Oh, that was such a cool scene, too. He cuts it as he's getting pulled up, and then he's getting pulled up by Mike. Poor Mike, man.
Mike doesn't get it good in this movie at all.
Dude, I love when Burke is talking to Mike at the bar, and it's just his face in the shadows. And, dude, you know, like, oh, man, he's so screwed up. I thought it would have been cool if we got, like, one of the eye flashes there, but he hadn't died yet. He just felt real sick.
Mm-hmm.
But I love when, like, he finally leans forward and you see how messed up he is and he's just all pale and bleeding.
I'm curious, though, because I think there is still potential for a flash to happen there, because at Burke's house, he's still not dead yet, and you get that first eye flash when he's putting down the window.
True.
Because he dies later, bites disappear when he dies.
Man.
Anyways, that was the sixth scene. They all realize, holy shit, where are the cars? And so they go to the drive-in theater. Oh my god, they're getting chased around by Anne, Susan's mom. They're trying to find Barlow. You got Mark gets in a car and starts just boom.
Yeah, because the sun is setting during this scene.
Yep. And
it is the fastest and slowest setting I've ever seen. In
because of
like
the,
at the same time.
Yeah. Because of the screen, too.
Yeah, the drive-in movie theater screen. So that's what Mark's taking out so that the sun can. That's such a cool scene, too, when it falls and then like eight vampires just burst into flame.
That was so sick. Also, very poor design. Why would you put a screen facing west? Point it facing east so you can start movies a little earlier.
Yeah.
Kind of dumb.
I have to admit, that's not bright.
Hey, man. It's or just, it's for the
bright,
story.
But not in a good way.
I mean, okay. So if we're going to, mentioning that. So they find Barlow's coffin here, right? And apparently the lid of this thing weighs 9,000 pounds. And so they get onto the ground. The sun is both setting way too fast and way too slow at the exact same time. While they're trying to lift it up, the coffin is positioned in such a way that if they lift up the lid, it's blocking the sun from even, like, they had the back of it facing where the sun was going to be. So what are they going to do? They're going to get the coffin open. Barlow's still going to fuck them up because sun's not even going on him.
Yeah, and if it did, it wouldn't be on him for very long.
Yeah. How does it work with him? He's an ancient one. Can he just,
Well, I mean, I think the sun, I think it's established that the sun will still kill him. But he could probably take a little bit more.
Mm.
I mean, he would definitely kill those two before the sun takes him out.
Do you have a certain allotment of time in the sun based upon how many pointy teeth you have?
So if you go straight up Dracula lore,
okay,
it depends on how freshly you've drank.
Fed. Interesting. So if you're freshly full, you're less susceptible to sun damage?
At least according to Bram Stoker.
Anyways. Stand up in one of the coolest shots I've ever seen in my entire life. You have Barlow chasing Mark around. Mark's underneath the screen, kind of crawling around between the cars. And you've got, what's his name, Barlow, just punching through the screen, trying to grab him. And he finally grabs him and he's pulling him up towards his nasty, gnarly vamp face. And you just see, and this giant hole where Barlow's face used to be. And in the distance behind the hole, you've got Ben standing there because he just stabbed him in the face with a stake. It was so sick. That visual was so freaking dope.
Then, like I said, there were so many really awesome shots in this movie. I do not understand what stick was up the critics' asses. Cause
I don't either.
I really don't get it, dude. I don't know what more they could have wanted. It was a cohesive, perfectly paced story at 2 hours. It's vampires. I don't know what more they wanted, man.
Yeah, I don't understand. Even on IMDb, which is like completely community driven, it's sitting at a 5.6 out of 10 with 23,000 votes. Like, are we just so desensitized to like something? Like, were they expecting Abigail?
I don't know, man. I really don't know what people like.
Yeah.
Because to me, this movie hit everything and more. If that was the plan for the critics to undersell it so that I was impressed, kudos, because you did
Thank
it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this, you know, definitely this is one of the best Stephen King adaptations.
I'd absolutely list it up there with The Mist. It's also crazy because they shot this thing in 2021, and they didn't believe in it that much that they've sat on it this long. And that's, yeah. It just came to HBO because they didn't give it a theatrical, and I don't know, man. I disagree in every regard. This movie was amazing.
Mm-hmm. I 100% agree with that. I mean, it's like it hit all the strides. They shortened it, so you're not slogging through 3 hours of story.
And it still gets all the relevant points.
Yeah, and I still feel like I got basically everything out of the book.
Yeah,
I just referenced this movie, but I saw Abigail in theaters last year. And
that's the one with the little girl vampire, right?
Yeah, it was the one with the little girl vampire that, like, all of the trailers ruined the twist that she was a vampire.
Yeah.
Right off the bat, so you knew it going into it. That is a bitch fest for a different day, but I get it. They're completely different movies. I think this was, by far and away, to me, a better and more enjoyable vampire movie than that movie was. And 100%. I enjoyed that movie, but this movie ruled.
Yeah.
With Mark being such a little badass, like, this had so much Lost Boys vibes for me. Mm-hmm. As someone who loved that, and I was looking forward to talking about that, I'm glad that we didn't watch that and we watched this instead.
It's also, it has super hard, like, Stranger Things vibes, and that's obviously because Stranger Things was very inspired by Stephen King stories of this irk where they have characters like Mark. And it's just, yeah, it felt so natural even in this era. Like, it's a good watch, dude. I don't...
Yeah.
Watch this movie, everybody. You really should.
Seriously.
Do you guys want to know one thing that stuck out to me?
What's that?
One thing that I love about Stephen King's books is and movies is when you're watching it, like if you watch a visual adaptation and you're trying to piece together exactly when they have the story set. And I couldn't exactly place this one. It looked like the 60s-ish, like maybe 50s to 60s-ish. But then, especially with cars and stuff. But then you go into Mark's bedroom and he's got like a 1980s Batman nightlight. Did you guys notice that?
Yeah.
No. I will say the one thing I did notice, and I won't knock any points because you kind of have to at this point. This movie also suffers from that classic car syndrome where it's set in a period and it has cars from that era. But the only people that still have those cars are like pristine collectors. So every car looks mint when you know there are some rough, rough drivers back in those days that were rust buckets, especially up in Maine.
Well, and also at that time, too, smoking wasn't as heavily stigmatized.
Yeah.
You had Burke smoking in the classroom.
But, yeah, I mean, you had... Yeah, so, I mean, the cars would have that smoke-stained interior, too. Mm-hmm.
They'd be rough. Yeah. But, I mean, again, yeah, at this point in this era, you're not going to get beat-up 70s cars still, so...
And I think also in a movie like this, it's like everything else looks so clean mm-hmm. and crisp that having like really clean and crisp cars just really sets the like visual motif
of classic Americana before it goes rotten. I mean, yeah, it's like it does help ideal. With that too. Uh-huh, exactly.
Yeah.
For sure. And that's why I can't excuse it, but you know, make it work in universe, like I guess that really does. So I'm going to shut up now about that. You guys have like some favorite scenes you want to get make sure get referenced.
What you got, Brooks?
Well, the scene with Marlowe versus Father Callahan.
Really good. When he comes up out of nowhere and just like eviscerates his mom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, but like Callahan knows that he's screwed too. And I just love seeing like the cross flicker and get weaker as his faith drains out of him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That whole scene in general was awesome when you had Callahan and Mark trying to convince Mark's parents to get out of there because Barlow was gonna come kill them. And just one by one, I guess there's only two of them, so one by two, they get murked. That shit was crazy. I referenced this earlier when we were talking about Phasmophobia, but when they all make it up to the house and they're like, oh, where's the body? And to Mark talking about Straker, and he points up the stairs and you have the doc being like, well, Callahan kind of wusses out. And she goes, I'll go up there. And the basement door just creaks open. And they all start to walk towards this basement door like, motherfuckers, what are you doing? You're dealing with vampires, first of all.
Yeah.
And then they take one look in there and go, there's no steps.
Which is a cool thing, too. I like that he took the steps out because it makes it like a feeding pit for Barlow. Because, of course, yes. Barlow can get out. The vampires can fly. But anybody else that gets down there, mm-mm.
Yeah, you're screwed.
Yeah.
You know, that is something that everybody should be able to see that and realize that that's the whole point.
Yeah.
But
maybe we shouldn't go down.
What do they immediately say when they discover that?
There's a ladder in the car.
There's a ladder in the car. What are you doing?
I wanted to reference again that scene with where Barlow takes Burke, where like as soon as the light flips on, he's there with his hand and he just smashes it as he bites into him. Such a cool visual scene. Uh-huh. And the kidnapping scene too, with like the blue light, the blue shadow light puppet stuff is just, man, this movie, it rules, dude. I want to kick every critic in the dick that's a tick about this movie, man. They don't get it.
No, this is like visual aesthetic, visual porn. Dude. My face is hurt this entire month
too, as well. I'm gonna throw that in there as well.
Like the score was fantastic at keeping the dread. Yeah, the audio, like just the breathings and the screechings, the harmonica,
the faint whisperings. Like it was really well done.
Mm-hmm.
When they're in the basement and you could hear Barlow's breathing.
Oh yeah.
Oh,
that part where like the guys drop the casket and it breaks, so his essence starts to leak out, and the one guy like gets hypnotized by him from the whispers.
Mm-hmm.
I love too that it shows later on that dude is fully a vampire. He's like one of the guys in the trunk. I think you're like, oh, it's that guy from the start. They totally got him eventually.
Yeah. There's not much I can knock this movie for. If anything,
Well, before you get into your knocks, what do you say we rate it? And then you can mention your knocks with your rating. What's our cycle here?
Let's keep the same. I think rounding back to me, so I'll do you. You do Brooks. Brooks does me.
Sounds good.
All right. Shit. Okay. Kyle. I've played Phasmophobia with you recently.
Sure thing.
You're not a very You don't like surviving. You don't have a good survival's instinct.
I have a need to get the job done at my own personal health. So, yes. Yeah.
I feel like if you're in this very clearly evil vampire's house lair thing and a basement door creaked open, you would absolutely go down. You probably wouldn't even go get a ladder.
I just hop down?
You just hop down. And so while you're wandering around... You start getting flashbacks to that time that you watched The Warriors because like all of these glasses start clanking together.
Sure.
As the air starts to vibrate. On a scale of 1 to 34 glass wine bottles that start vibrating and clinking together, how many glass bottles are you giving this movie based on your enjoyment at the time of watching it?
I mean, no fluff, no guff. If you couldn't tell, this movie's got the stuff. 34 out of 34, man. I was absolutely floored, impressed out of my pants by this movie. My only complaint is not a knock against the movie. I couldn't get HBO to work at the Airbnb Mandy and I are staying at, so I had to watch this entire movie on my phone screen. And I was so close to the phone because I was so into it. It was like I was wearing goggles. I'm like, oh my God, what is going to happen here? I cannot wait to watch this movie again when I get back home on my big screen with Mandy.
You reinvented the Google Cardboard.
Yeah, essentially. It was like that, dude. Like, there was times when, like, I'm watching it and I've got my headphones in and I'm just like, I could feel myself, like, my heart was beating. Like, what's going on? Oh, it was so well done, man. I loved it. Like, the visual, the way it flowed. Like I said, I was hooked from that kidnap scene because that was, like, artistically shot AF. Just overall, beautiful movie, beautiful sound design, well acted. Like, nobody, even kid actors are great in this, which is such a rarity. They're not distracting at all. Mark is such a badass. It's just all around fantastic, man. I love this movie. Okay, I want to tell everybody to watch it. So that's what I got.
Okay.
All right.
Well, you got it. Give me the rating spiel.
All right, Brooksy. So you're part of the way there. So let's say that you're an ancient evil vampire who's lost his hair because of the evilness that exudes from him.
That right? Sounds good already.
Yeah, we're right on track. So you are this evil vampire who has turned an entire small town in Maine to your will, and they've established a coven at the local drive-in where they have cars, and there are, let's say, Brooks, 200 cars at this drive-in theater this evening. And those 200 cars in the trunks of them, how many of those cars have vampires waiting, using them as coffins?
That's a really good rating system.
That is a good rating system. I will say, and it's very similar to the one that I have in mind. So I will say that this is a full lot, man. 200 vampires in those cars. I have one nitpick, and that's the scene where Mark drives that car through the posts underneath. I'm like, realistically, might not be able to get enough speed to go through all of those.
Maybe get one of those.
Yeah, because those are some pretty thick.
Yeah, they were very thick timber, but
I mean, in the very least, 1970s. So, steel in the cars.
Sure,
so
sure, sure.
Maybe
they're like boats, but by the end of that, he's definitely not killing Anne.
Yeah. So, but other than that, everything that Kyle said is pretty much true. It's a great movie, a great adaptation of one of my favorite Stephen King novels. It makes me want to watch the original again, but I think it improved on some of the things from the original.
Uh-huh.
So they made Barlow and Straker both a threat.
Yep.
That is, you know, to be taken seriously. So it was very well done. I mean, even though Straker gets murked by the kid, to be fair, that kid was pretty well prepared for anything at that point. So, I mean, I love this movie, and I will watch this again.
100%.
So, Sean.
Yo.
So we are at that same drive-in theater with up to, you know, 200 vampires chasing you, but are in those cars, but say 8 of them got out and are chasing you to the edge of, and you're trying to run to the edge of the sunset and, you know, get to safety. How many of those vampires burn up after Mark takes out the drive-in screen?
Man, you boys always give me the low number ones. I don't have any room to play. So with that, I'm going to have to give it a full 8. There's not much else to add on to this outside of, you know, I've got to say, this is another shot at the critics. In terms of Stephen King stories, this is one of the least slow burny stories and adaptations I've ever seen of a Stephen King anything. From beginning to end, it was almost running in all cylinders and always pushing forward. It was fantastic. Yeah. Mark is one of my new favorite characters of all time in terms of just a character in a movie. That kid kicks so much ass. Visually, this movie rules. Tonally, this movie rules. Sound, oh, dude, guys, there's so much to love about this movie that I don't know what the critics, what other watchers, what other people are smoking. I don't want what you're smoking. It's clearly bad.
Yeah, it's not good for you.
My only nitpick on this movie is the fact that it never made a theatrical release, so I don't have any idea of the budget or how much it made on opening or in general.
That's such a bummer, too.
Yeah.
So
I think this would have done better than the Voyage of the Demeter.
100%. I think this would have done better than The Void, too. I mean, I love The Void. This is a way better movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's more exciting. I don't get it, dude. Whatever. But F critics, as three Seriously. Critics here talking, don't listen to us. Except do. Go watch this movie right now.
This was the lowest rated movie that we watched this year.
And it's so dumb because it might be my favorite we did.
It is.
I really did like Hush, too. But man,
I was about to say, I'm torn, but they're two completely different movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, just the only two similar movies would have been In the Mouth of Madness and The Void.
Mm-hmm.
The only two movies that you can even say are remotely similar. Everything else was a different type of movie. And, you know, even though I'm biased because the season is named after me, this is probably one of the best Brookstobers ever.
Hands down.
It's my favorite.
Yeah, easily.
There hasn't been a stinker.
I'm curious to see where we end up next year. I think it'll be just based on luck of the draw, who's got picks next year on what we get.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed for that weird French.
I look forward to whatever that entails.
Yeah.
Kyle.
Yes, sir.
Real quick show question. Are we taking next week off to
Yes, we will.
To
we
hard will have launch into off. The new one?
Yep, we will have next week off. And the second week in November will be the new and improved revamped Experience Grind 2.0. I've also come to take it. Experience Grind Inc. Incorporated. Mm. Because we're going to have multiple employees now. We're a corporation. We're incorporated, baby.
I like the sound of that.
Yeah.
Any listeners, if you are of the
Does that
Discord
make me a consultant?
Yeah. Brooks is a consultant for sure.
If you are of the variety of folks that prefers Discord to your social media kind of experience, keep your eyes out on that. We have someone very important to the show working very hard on that right now in the soft launch that we are all partaking in right now. It's really freaking cool. And time I've ever had fun on Discord.
I think
lots of changes.
We would encourage people to move there because of the way that Facebook and Twitter now operate. They're so antithetical to like getting our content to your eyeballs. If you join our Discord, you'll know when we post something. You won't get the notification 3 days later. You'll see it when it goes live. You'll get a ding. You'll know every time episodes go live. You can recommend stuff for us. We've got channels for that. We've got gaming channels. It's going to be a huge, awesome conglomerate.
There's
That's
a good chance.
Experience Grind Inc.
There's a good chance you'll even be able to see what episodes are coming up. There's so much to be excited for, and I can't wait for everybody to see and hear it. But man, boys.
you can interact with your favorite hosts and guest hosts.
Or tell us we suck.
Friends of the show.
Oh, don't tell us that we suck. I think that's against the rules.
Yeah, that is against the rules. That's part of the terms and services that you sign whenever you join.
I've been given a ban hammer. Don't make me use it.
And I know Sean very well. He will use it.
No. Kudos. Again, I'd like to raise just a toast to Brooks. This has been a fantastic Brooks-tober. I love you boys. This has been awesome. I don't know, Brooks, take them out. Tell the listeners what they can do.
Well, you can.
There's only one right thing here.
I know. I'm going to see what he says.
Yeah.
I hate it when you guys do that to me. You can get carried in on your box of Earth. And
I don't know how he's doing this verbatim, what I was thinking.
And as the movers drop it, you can gently whisper into one of the movers' ears, go fuck yourself.
I would say go suck yourself.
That's what I was thinking.
Suck in the blood.
Ah! Yep, that's what I was thinking.
I love you, boys. Happy Brooks Tobin, fellas.
You can go to Maryland. I'm not there.
Massachusetts.
Yeah, Massachusetts. Oh, yeah, that's right.
Don't tell him.
He's I know it was one of those places
vampire
with an
country
M.
With Stephen King. I know that.
It's one of those places with an M. I got a buddy that lives in Boston.
I'm not even close to there.
I know.
Okay. I don't know if this has been asked before. This is for both of you.
Okay,
If you were in a situation... Oh, fuck. No, I'm pivoting. Would you rather have to turn into a werewolf or into a vampire?
Ooh, that's really good. Damn. Mm. I'm gonna say werewolf. Because for the other times you can live a fairly normal life, and it's just like the one time a month that you have to go insane. Whereas like, I don't know, do werewolves have like increased life in general too, or is that just a vampire thing?
No, they
get longevity.
They can't die.
Okay, I still think werewolf because you can live somewhat normal for a little bit. You can pretend yourself.
Okay,
that's my answer.
What you got, Brooks?
I would probably go full heel and vampire.
Oh man, we're mortal enemies.
Team Jacob.
Team Edward, for sure. All right, I love you, fellas.
Later, boys. Happy Brookstober.